Hello, and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast, hosted by me, Sam Harris. A person with a growth mindset believes that their most basic abilities can be developed through dedication and hard work. Brains and talent are just a starting point. This view creates a love of learning and a resilience that is essential for great accomplishment. Especially all great people have had these qualities. On the podcast today, we have Tamiwa Adey. He's a great guy, and I've known him for a short while now, and every time I do meet him, I always learn something new. He's built various businesses from a tech-first perspective, and he's learned a lot of lessons along the way. He's now traveling the world as a digital nomad. I interviewed him in January 2017, just as I was about to start my first job as a software developer in London, just before he left Britain to start on his nomadic journey. He also has a crazy history that I had no real idea about before this interview, but I'll let you hear the story from him as he tells it beautifully. Tommy, aerospace engineer and entrepreneur, can you tell me a bit about your background?
Wow, where do I start? I was born in Lagos. I mostly grew up in Lagos, and I schooled there till it was time for university. And
so you didn't travel at all, really? Or?
Well, I did a bit to Ghana, to a few places in Africa, but never out of that sphere.
So, yeah, how would you introduce yourself to new people?
How would I introduce myself? Recently, my girlfriend says this, that we're designers. Not designers in the sense that I design pixels or I design physical products, but in the sense that no matter what situation arises, we make something out of it. We try to see the good out of a bad situation, and we just do whatever we can.
Yeah.
So I'd like to, from today forward, start introducing myself that way. I'm a designer.
Okay, cool. So how did you introduce yourself to your girlfriend?
How did I introduce myself to... I didn't, actually. I said... I mostly tend to listen to people in the first few minutes of a conversation.
Yeah.
And so I let her talk. And it was one of those situations where you talk for a while and then you say, oh, we haven't even said what our names are.
Mm.
So we introduced ourselves probably 1 hour into the conversation.
Yeah.
So that's fun.
Fine if you introduce yourself too early, like, doesn't really matter about yourself, but you kind of forget what the other person even did or stuff. It's like,
exactly.
Anyways, you kind of get to know them a little bit.
Exactly. And it's always fun to have those type of conversations where you talk about external things.
Yeah.
That's where conversations should be with someone you don't know.
Would you call yourself a saint or a sinner?
Definitely a sinner.
Yeah.
I
glad you're honest.
Well, I do anything it takes.
Yeah.
I mean,
have you ever stolen anything?
Stolen? Wow. I mean, I can't even count how much I've stolen.
Oh, my God.
But then again, I mean, I could tell you a wonderful story about this, how my view on life changed early on. So I left home when I was 8 years old. My mom cried, but my dad believed this was the way to bring up children.
Yeah.
You just have to leave the house. But my mom thought, oh, it was too early. You can't let him leave. It's just 8 years old. So, but when I left, I went with a bunch of food stuff. So my mom packed me up. She gave me gari, which is cassava. It's not really popular here. She gave me provisions and stuff. So when I went on my own and I went to this camp, I started talking to people, of course, much older than I was. So they were much more experienced with life and living by themselves. So I gave them, I said, oh, welcome, this is me. My name is Tamiwa. I am here in the scam. So you're so young. I'm like, yeah, I know, but my dad wants this. So so they still had a lot of food. So a lot of them came, oh, you know, we share and we care in this camp, and can you give me some food? So I was like, of course. I gave cassavas. I gave things to people, provisions to people. And then it was time after a week or two, my provisions ran out, and everybody just sort of forgot me. And I went back to these people and say, oh, it's all sharing and caring. I see you have a bunch of cassava grains. Can you give me some? And they were like, nope.
Wow.
And this was the same person I gave Listen, so then I thought, okay, wow, great. It's not, life is not as straightforward as it is. I thought, if I give you something, you tend to help me out when I don't have as well. So it wasn't that way. Then I found someone to get in touch, send a letter to my mom. Back then it was just letters, there was no phones.
Yeah.
Send a letter to my mom. My mom rushed down as soon as she could with more food. So she also brought someone to get, I know. She also got someone to get this wood box that I can lock and put my provisions in. So she did that and she had this space for me. She talked to the leader of the camp and it was all good. I had food again. I was happy. The next morning, I woke up with my locker looking intact. Everything was good. I thought I opened it and there was nothing in there. Then I looked at the back, through the back of the locker. They had removed the back and took everything, all my food stuff. And then the monster in me triggered.
Yeah.
I sort of just said, okay, I'm not going to call my mom. I'm going to I'm going to repair this locker and I'm going to fill it up with food.
Yeah.
So I went on a shopping spree. And yeah, that was the first time I stole.
Wow. Yeah, it's good to like...
And I stole a lot.
Your parents.
Food stuff, singlets, everything.
And then, so I guess things like that, I always try to not tell my mum things when things are bad because she just worries. So I prefer to like sort it out. And if it's something I want her to know about, I'll tell her like many weeks later that something bad happened. She'll still panic. I'm like, mum, it's fine. I was run over, but it was 2 weeks ago. I'm definitely fine. I'm standing in front of you. And she's like, oh my God. Like, mum, hello, stop. Get off the... Mom.
Yeah. Moms are awesome.
Yeah.
They care a lot.
Yeah, that's cool.
What then led you from that to start your first actual entrepreneurial venture?
I've always done things in an entrepreneurial way. I'd bought and sold tomatoes in traffic jams. Why traffic jams? Because in Africa, most times when there's traffic jams, people don't have time to go to the market to buy something and they're most times rushing home to cook or make dinner. So they find it and the traffic jams are really, really long. So you could stay for 6 hours. So it's very convenient to be able to buy stuff when there's traffic. So I've sold water in traffic. So I always did this kind of stuff. My mom, however, started this cyber cafe, which is get a bunch of old computers, find some provider that can give you...
This is like back in the 90s though, right?
Yeah, exactly. Find a bunch of old...
That started one in the 90s.
Oh, really?
What was it, millennium? Yeah, sorry. Okay, 2002, I think.
In 2000s. Not 90s, actually. Yeah. There were no computers like that. There was Windows 95.
Well, I guess Nigeria...
That was my... Yeah. But the computers were old, shitty computers. Yeah. But she got about four of them, and then she got this provider to get internet, really slow dial-up internet back then. And so she got these four computers, and then you pay to use the computers. So I helped with that. I helped with system admin stuff, and that was how I learned about computers and got fascinated with computers. And I looked online to see if there was more things I can do, security stuff, hack things. If you could change the theme of the author, if the themes they gave you, if you weren't happy with the themes on Windows that time, how do you change it to be this anime character that I liked? Not just the background, the old theme, you know, the way the GUI, the graphic user interface was. So I was looking at how you could rebuild that, and I found online this forum where you can ask questions and it tell you, oh, you have to learn programming. This is the link to learn this. That's how I got into programming at such an early age.
Yeah, how old were you then?
I was 13, 14.
Mm. So you started like doing websites or?
No, I never did websites till I came here, actually. Really? Because I thought they were stupid. I liked them. I liked what it brought. It made information available. But I never really got into building websites. I was more interested in hacking things
Behind
the scenes. So C, Pascal, I was never really attracted
into other websites at all, or just sort of putting things together like algorithms and stuff.
I didn't learn algorithms for a while. This was just scripts you write on Bash shell that do things for you that you normally wouldn't be able to do.
Cool. So when did that become entrepreneurial at all?
Yeah. So that was, so I talked about the entrepreneurial part and I talked about the coding part. I combined them when I came here. So I came here, I didn't have a lot of money. With the scholarship and everything, I needed to feed myself. I needed to do a bunch of stuff. So I was looking for ways to make money. And someone said, oh, why not do stuff online if you can program? So my first ever startup, wasn't really a startup, it was just an online business, was called Classified Ads Posting, in short, CLADS Posting, where most people, when they post on the classified ad site like Craigslist or Gumtree, as soon as you post a service or you post something, an ad, it's immediately buried because of the amount of people that post their services on there. So the idea was, okay, if I used VPNs and in China or in around the world to post multiple ads for you every hour, say, you get more visibility and you just pay for the service. So it was incredible because companies from Canada, US, asked me to make cron posts. So cron posts are scheduled posts for them on different classifieds in Canada, classifieds in US, Craigslist is most popular. Kijiji was also there in Canada. There was Gumtree in UK. So I did that for a while and I sold it as a service. So that was my first online business. Then I thought I moved on to College Store. So it was just basically people that when you go to your first year of university, the books you buy in the first year, you most times don't need in the second year.
Yeah, or up to the first week.
You're like, exactly.
I've never opened this book.
Exactly. So many people find ways to get rid of the books. And the best ways I found was finding someone in your year that you can sell the book to. I mean, in the year below you, that you can sell the book to.
The newbie is going, oh, you need this book. This book was really useful. It's definitely should be on the list.
Exactly. So that was mostly what the site was for. So I had a co-founder then called Muhammad Khan. Okay. And we built the site. And we tried every possible means to monetize it, but students do not want to pay for shit.
Yep.
Finding a co-founder can always be difficult. How did you find Muhammad?
In year one, we had this programming class, Intro to C. And everybody was like, oh, programming. And then you just see two comfortable people like sitting, coding along. And then I just sort of looked, okay, there's also someone else that's comfortable. What's that guy? And then that's how I started talking to him. Like, it was the other guy that was comfortable in programming when everybody was like, oh, everybody was, how do I do this? How do I do that? I was like,
I guess it's kind of like that on the coding boot camp. I was on, there's like one other guy that knew what he was doing and everyone else had never touched a line of code and we're like, you're never going to learn any of this crap. We'll just sit together and like...
And this was the coding boot camp you went for recently in Brussels.
Yeah.
How did you find it?
Oh, yeah, it was good. Like the first 7 to 8 weeks were actually awful in terms of... They just marketed it to too many people and sold different things. And so, like I said, there was all the people trying to learn like full stack within 3 months.
Yeah.
They just needed to learn the basics. Quite a lot of people dropped out or just didn't come to lessons. We just got like really concentrated tuition for just us.
Yeah.
So it ended up being really good. And the people running it were really cool and like great guys. So
as we both know as entrepreneurs, the first time you do something, so many things go wrong. But it is by far and away the best way to make a good product is by just doing it and learning from it. And they gave us great rates for being the guinea pigs.
So you obviously self-taught yourself completely?
Yeah, self-taught. I think for me, the best way to learn coding is to build projects. So I really wanted to get the website of CLADS Posting out And that's how I learned how to build websites in PHP, MySQL, HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and jQuery. So I always feel when you have a project you want out there and you don't have the money or the funds to pay someone to build it for you, learning the coding, it's a way to structure yourself and you have a goal at the end of the day. So
yeah.
I found that the best way to learn project basis. I remember you starting to learn Rails. Why did you start?
I was just at work and, you know, I wasn't getting any chance to do any programming in my work environment. And
I remember that.
Things going on. And so I was trying to be kind of strict about doing like sort of one evening a week set aside of that. But I had quite a few things going on at the time. I was learning DJing. I was in a choir.
You were in a choir?
Running the Airbnb. Yeah, I'm in a choir.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Singing?
Yeah, singing. My bass.
Gosh. Even now?
Yeah. I went, it wasn't in Brussels. I joined an African choir. That was really cool.
No way.
Way. There was only two. It was weird because in Brussels, full of like Africans, our choir, two Africans. and then like 60 white people that wish they were black.
Really?
Yeah, but we had a lot of fun and like, you know, drumming and singing things that we didn't understand. And it was cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's just good like once a week to just sort of spend like 2 hours doing something completely away from like technology.
I find that incredible, yes. I love doing that. Something that takes me away from this world of staring at your screen all day long.
Yeah. Okay, so can you describe the startup bakery, which is like your big project over the next year that you're working on?
Okay, I think I need to track back a little bit and how I got from cloud posting to this project I'm working on. Over the years, I built a number of companies, some successful, some not so much. This last project I worked on, there was an overarching theme I saw. There were things that happened that I couldn't control. But one thing stands out when you have the skill to develop stuff as a programmer, you tend to just, you have an idea and then because you have the answer to be able to build that product and see it come to life, you tend to go for that as the first point of action. And that can be a blessing and a curse at the same time. Because at the end of the day, the first thing you do is you just jump straight to your computer, fire up the terminal, and start coding. That's not always the answer to develop ideas. That's one way. Some people have done it successfully. But more importantly, it's always best to reform the idea. So this is what non-technical entrepreneurs have that technical entrepreneurs don't, is they can't jump into code. So they write down the idea. They have write down a long document about what this idea is for, why these people need it, what they talk about, how they talk about this. And these, to me, are the most important part of reforming the idea, because you're not just crazy. And some people even go as far, the really good non-technical entrepreneurs actually go as far as to pitching people and getting customers before anything is built. So I looked at all these other points, and then there's also this guy that started Product Hunt. So he started out, is a non-tech entrepreneur. I started out as an email list. He had this basic rudimentary email list and said, okay, look, I'm going to send you 5 cool startups that's launched this week or that I've discovered this week. And investors were interested in that. A lot of investors were interested in that and they signed up to his list. So he sort of got this people to his network. And after a couple of months, he raised $2 million. So the difference is he started something basic and he got the network of people. So those investors that he has created value for over the years felt they needed to give him something to help him build this community to something. So this is the power of network and the power of having a network that can propel anything you do in the future. After this last startup, I saw that and I saw the difference between me and him. Even though my startup was died, there's no document about it. The difference between him and me is documenting and getting value with network. So I thought, okay, what can I provide of value? I don't want to start another blog post. There's not much value I'll be bringing to the table. They have great, great, great content out there already. So the only way I can create value, or the one way I saw that I could create value, was actually helping people that wanted to start, that were serious about starting. So I have to filter the people that were serious about starting a startup. They have the idea, but they don't have the capability. And at the same time, bring my network up, because the thing about creating value for people is they become in your network, and you never know what or who would be useful with your future projects. So I started this project called the Startup Bakery, where I help non-aspiring founders build every month. I help a non-aspiring founder build their project.
Non-aspiring founder, sorry.
Sorry, I said non-aspiring. Non-technical, aspiring.
An aspiring non-technical founder.
Yeah, did that out. Okay. Now, so this project I'm working on, the Startup Bakery, is basically a way to help non-technical aspiring founders take their idea from scratch to a version one. So every month I select one founder from a list of ideas that have been submitted through the platform. And how I filter out that founder is with two things. One is the ability to bring other people to create a following. And the second is also how cool the idea is. So the community votes on the idea. This connects with what I explained earlier with the network and creating value. So I was thinking, what's the craziest thing I could do? What's the craziest way I could create value for people? And there's a community around this. So the thing I'm trying to do is I'm trying to create a community where everyone can help each other out. So when someone's idea has been built, if he's trying to solve a problem in fundraising and someone has done it before in the community, he helps out. So it's that kind of giving, sharing community I'm trying to build. Where we all help each other out. So there are many people that have submitted their ideas already. Hopefully in the future, there'll be other people working with me with this, so we can maybe deal with the fundraising, deal with maybe start the fund.
How did you choose the winner?
I thought about this a lot. There were so many, good ideas. I don't think the idea that I've selected is the best idea, but the founder worked the hardest. He gave the most in a way. He brought in a ton of people. He brought in 17 people, the most. And the closest was someone else that brought in 13 or 12 or 11, something around that range. So he did a lot. And it was always... So he brought in a lot of people. You could see the effort he put in. And he's someone, he blogs, he's out there. You could see someone that really is passionate about it. Every single email I sent out, he read everything 5 times or more.
Yeah.
Because you can track the email open rate and everything. He read everything more. He signs up to everything. He really cared about solving this. He commented on his own product page, liked it, everything. Yeah. He did everything he could. So I think he's probably the most dedicated as a founder. His idea is probably not the best, I think.
So your advice to anyone applying to the next round would be work as much as possible.
Yeah, give a shit. Give a shit. Yeah. Show you care about this. Show you don't just want the product built and it's going to sit on your drive.
Well, you've had your initial launch and you've got your first guy for the first month, but you're also leaving London and you're again traveling around the world.
Yeah, so it's been a crazy, crazy 2016. It's been, I've had tough years, especially when I was little during my upbringing, but in the years I could take care of myself and it wasn't food. I wasn't starving. It wasn't something rudimentary like living in Lagos. 2016 was probably the toughest.
Yeah.
I was tougher than the year I came here. It was a very, very tough year. It took a lot of character for me. There's a lot of stories to 2016, but I can talk about it sometime. But a few things I've learned this past year. That's taken prominence in my life this last year, and it's stoicism. Because it's the most practical philosophy out there to navigate your way through life. And it's just, before I go on, actually, what's stoicism about? Stoicism is basically a way to understand life in a way that it tells you there are many things in life that are not in your control. And it's okay. It's okay to not be in control of these things. And you can't worry about things you don't have control over. Yes. So there's a phrase that describes this really well. That whenever there's a big, bad thing that happens to you, that's, in every case, that's not the worst possible situation. The worst possible situation is that bad thing and you losing your head. Because then you have two problems.
Yeah, you're letting it take you over.
One, you don't need. So I've always, stoicism has really helped me understand that I could really find a positive in everything. I could really change my view on it, which is really all I can do. Because sometimes you have problems that there's nothing you can do about. And if you could just change your views, how you look at this, you could probably get something good out of it. So no one really wakes up and says, hey, I need philosophy.
Yeah.
Right? It's not really, it's always, I have a problem and I'm really looking for a way to deal with this problem. And that's how I've come about stoicism. I've taken to this, and this year, I've taken this terrible thing and I've turned it on its head, and I've started the startup bakery, and I'm using this to explore the world. Because I think right now you see that from what you know about me is like, okay, this guy dabbles in things, he tries to do what he can do, and also, but really my core goal is to be of value and create something huge. I'm really entrepreneurial, and I believe that it's like Steve Jobs says, when you look around you and you see all the big buildings, the big corporate companies, and most people that start this are really no smarter than you are. I really, really embody this, and I really believe in it. So my main goal, that's everything I do right now, is to start a global company that not just makes a lot of money, but really makes a difference. So everything I do goes or guides me towards our North Star. When I see if there's something that doesn't take me there, I cut it out. So that's my goal, and if that makes it easier to understand where I'm going ultimately. So right now, this 2017, I'm going to be traveling the world, starting with South America for South and Central America for 6 months. So I've turned this bad situation and I've said, okay, look, I have skills that is in demand. I can help people. I can cut the cost, my monthly cost, by about a good 80% and live a better life. My first stop is Panama. That will be my main base. And I travel. I just get flat for 6 months there. And then I travel 2-3 weeks at a time to Argentina, Mexico, Ecuador, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, and you name it, and Brazil, maybe. And I'll be doing that for 6 months. And after the 6 months, I come to Europe, and I think I'll be in Barcelona and Leipzig, and also Italy for a bit. I've traveled to most of these places already, so it will be mostly work. But then after that, I take my bags again and go to Asia, which is another continent I've not been. And I'll be in South Korea, Indonesia, Japan, which is a country I love, 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 love. I love everything about Japan. And Thailand, of course. And those are the primary places. Maybe China, but we'll see how it goes to visit. And what this trip is, it's for me to not just discover myself, but discover people, discover differences in culture. I'm not going to be staying in an hotel or an Airbnb, I'm going to be living in rural communities, places where they can't speak English that much, or they can barely speak English. I want to soak myself in different cultures and different mentalities. And I think most of the best things and most of the best parts of my life I've discovered through going outside my comfort zone. And this is as extreme as I can take it. And I started with South America also because I know Spanish, a bit of Spanish. So even going to a small city in Panama where they barely speak English is easier. But then when I go to Asia, especially different countries in Asia speak different languages, it'll be tough. I know a bit of Japanese, but Chinese and other languages I don't. So it'll be tough, but I would love to see how far I can go. I think it will shape me and shape my life in a very positive direction towards my North Star. And ultimately, the second thing I learned in 2016 is the process towards minimalism. And this is what I'm currently doing now. I'm still in the process of it. I'm not fully minimalist. By the end of this month, I would be where I have just a few things I can pack in a little bag, and that's all I need. The process of cutting everything off right now is such a satisfying feeling, where I don't have that cognitive overload of, I have this, I have that, I have this, there's many things I don't need. What if this comes to my house? I had this bill I hadn't paid in university, and the bailiffs came a few days ago, and I was like, oh, fuck, sorry about the swearing. What do I do? What are we going to take?
Oh, not this.
This is not mine. This is, I bought this for my brother. I don't want him to take it. So you're just attached. What if your house burns down? You're like, oh shit, there's this, that. There is just this satisfying feeling and to not have a bunch of stuff you don't need. Because the truth is, if the house burns down, the TV burning down is not really that vital. It's not, but the fact that you lost it in that way makes it a burden, makes it hard for you. Yeah. So when you don't have it, you can go out.
It's refreshing.
It's refreshing. You can go from here to here. You can leave anytime you want. There's not any burden. You don't have tons of clothes. Oh, I have so many clothes I don't wear. So it's a lifestyle I'm really going to embody this next year. And it's really, really, I'm really looking forward to it.
Sounds awesome, man. Super jealous right now. I'm like, why am I taking this job? And like, what the hell am I doing?
I'm glad.
Other than you've been a bit around Europe, but you said you didn't really travel much. So is this going to be your first time really like traveling, as opposed to sort of like you've only lived in different places?
I'm in Nigeria, so we can't travel to a lot of places without applying for a month to get a visa. So imagine if you want to go to Italy, you need to apply and wait for a visa for a month. Let's say. So that's tedious. But the other thing is, I've done a bit in Spain. So I was in Salamanca for a month, and I lived in this grandma's house, and I really soaked up she rented a room out to me, and I soaked up the culture, because Salamanca is one of the places where they speak pure no accent Spanish. So it's really easy to pick up Spanish there than anywhere else in Spain. So the woman got friendly with me, the old woman, we talked a lot. We could only speak Spanish. I also met this girl from South Korea, and our common language was Spanish. So we had to do a lot of Google translating and speak. And we spoke on a Saturday from 9 to 6, we in the kitchen together, speaking just Spanish. But we're barely good at Spanish. We're just beginners at Spanish. But we had to do a lot of translating from English to Spanish and from South Korean to Spanish. And it was beautiful. So before I left, a few days before I left, the grandma said, "Bamo, bamo, Tommy, bamo, bamo." And that's like, come, Tommy. I want to show you this recipe that has been passed down from generation to generation of my family. And she taught me how to make family recipe of la tortilla de patata. So she does it in a slightly different way, more plain, brings out the flavor of each ingredient you put in it, which it doesn't have a lot. So it's just potatoes, eggs, onions, and a few other spices, but not that, nothing complicated. But the way they did it was, it's amazing. So this kind of experiences, and I really, is what I want to define my life by. It's never okay to stay in your circle and be there for the rest of your life. Life should be explored. And it's the only thing you remember at the end of your life. I think when you actually die and you think through your life and you can't remember, there were not standout experiences.
Yeah, definitely. When you look back at, like, I was talking to my friend I went around Mexico with for 2 months, and I couldn't even remember if it was last year or the year before last.
Yeah, like, there's been nothing in between. Like, if I've just been in London, like, there's no reason for me to, like, take photos or anything, and I'm just in the office every day. Like, nothing's really happening, and, like,
absolutely,
I haven't planned anything, and shit all happens, and then it's the next week of work, and you're like, it's just time, it's just going, and you're like, is this really what I want to have defined this year?
Exactly.
So you're going down the route of minimalism, but the last year you've been running an Airbnb. Is this something you're looking forward to cutting out of your life?
That's a very good question. I think a lot of people wonder about this. I think about this as well. So the first few months of being a host on Airbnb, for me, and I think for a lot of people, is always gratifying. You meet new people.
Yeah.
People from different aspects of life, culturally, mentally, I mean, stories.
Yeah, it's lovely having you to invite people into your home.
Amazing. But the thing is, you are bringing people to your home. So
yeah, and there's a service.
There is a service. So it's not fully a sharing economy thing. You are taking in money, so they expect this service. So some people are really fine with traveling, while some people are not. Some people think it's a luxury
hotel.
Yeah, it's
basically like a hotel, and you're like,
yeah. So some people expect a luxury hotel experience. I had this woman from Holland with her husband, and she's like, oh, I want the bathtub. I want breakfast. Can you make me breakfast? I was like, oh, well, I don't think you
have access to the kitchen.
Yeah,
man.
You have access to the kitchen. You can take cereal. There is jam, there is croissant, anything you want. Like, but I want a full continental breakfast. I was like, okay, fair enough. I mean, she went on and on about this. So I went downstairs to Tesco's, bought bagels, bought orange juice, bought this jam, bought so much stuff. Then I came back upstairs to my flat, ready to help this woman make breakfast. And she was dressed. Said, oh, don't worry, I'm going out. So I was like, okay,
bagels for me.
Okay, well, so I just made breakfast and ate with my brother who was there at that time. So stories like this, I mean, that's not enough to drive down the amazing parts of Airbnb. But when this happens, and then something like this happens again, and then it happens again, the more you do it, the higher the chance of getting this people. And there are some people that I left the house with, and they partied and trashed everywhere.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That sucks. Yeah. So they trashed everywhere. There was weed on the rug, black stains, gum on the rug, everything. Yeah. So it was absolutely... So then I contact Airbnb about this, and they have the worst crisis management service ever.
Yeah.
Ever. So, but after a while, it sort of became a task. I sort of stopped talking as much to people and became a chore.
Yeah.
So I didn't, so I stopped. And I've not looked back. Adios.
So, the Startup Bakery, where do we find out about it? How can we find you online?
Yeah. So, good question. The Startup Bakery is at Tomiwa Ade. So that's TOMIWA adey.com/thestartupbakery. I believe it's forward slash.
To meworkaday.com, they'll find it.
Yes, you should be able to find it. But directly on the page, well, say the Startup Bakery. Or you can go on my Twitter at @stomiwaaday. It's my pinned tweet. And yeah, if you have a startup idea in mind.
Or a friend with an idea.
Or a friend with an idea, let them know.
Cool.
Because there's nothing to lose.
Boom. What an insightful guy. A great way to kick off the podcast. Sadly, his initial plans were delayed for his travels and the startup projects that he was working on due to some serious health issues. So he had to stay in Nigeria much longer than planned. But eventually, you'll be pleased to know he finally sorted a plane and a visa and he got himself to Panama. Also, sadly, I did not get to go visit him in Panama. But I did leave my job after 3 months and somehow I started my own development agency and immediately went to work remotely from Greece for a month. So it's a bit of another story. But I can't really complain too much. And one day I'll get to play. For me, the main takeaways from the episode, tip one, stoicism. I think he really focused on the power to turn things around and that you shouldn't really let things overcome you. He's ended up in some pretty bad situations, but instead of just sitting around, he has an uncanny ability to make the most of the situation. He seems to have a deep belief that you can always turn things around by accepting the situation and dealing with it. 2. Do something you're passionate about. If you want people to recognize what you're doing or help, you'll be much more successful if you can demonstrate clear passion for what you're doing and show the fact that you will go the extra mile. You're much more likely to open doors for yourself and just deliver on the project. Tip 3. The power of a network. A great lesson for tech entrepreneurs out there. Sitting inside building your project, perfecting things is great, but you'll never be a success unless you go outside and talk to people. Growing a network that you can use to leverage your situation is just as important skill as being able to code if you want to be a successful entrepreneur. You shouldn't forget about it. That's it for the show. If you want to know any more about Tommy or the topics we discussed further, then information is available at their website, growthmindsetpodcast.com. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe using your preferred podcast app, share it with your friends, and hit me up with a good rating, as it makes a huge difference to the success of the podcast, and it will really help me improve the show. Also, any comments or ideas, just let me know. You can always reach me on Twitter, @SamHarrisTweets. Until next time, keep grinding, keep growing, and keep something else with a G. Keep gurning? No, don't gurn. Yeah, keep doing cool stuff. Take it easy, people. Ah, that's bass bar. Doesn't stop things.